Podcasting 2.0 for December 8th, 2023, episode 158, Thingamajigger. Oh, hello, everybody. Welcome to the official board meeting for Podcasting 2.0. This is where it all goes down. In fact, we are the only boardroom that doesn't do end-of-year predictions because we are the future. I'm Adam Curry here in the heart of the Texas Hill Country and in Alabama, the man who fights the scrapers every day like a junkyard dog. Say hello to my friend on the other end, the one and only Mr. Dave Jones.
Hello. I like junkyard dog, junkyard dog.
You're junkyard dog, man. Junkyard dog, junkyard dog.
You caught me off guard because I just realized I didn't tweet, I didn't toot.
Well, you said rip so it. You said rip it.
I know, but that's right after I fell out of my chair, so I'm not, I'm discombobulated.
Dave has eaten so many beef milkshakes that he's breaking chairs now. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, like, I leaned over to get the shake, and it was just like, pop, and all of a sudden I was like fighting to not land in the floor.
I wish I'd been recording it, because that's exactly what it sounded. And it was like, oh, clunk, 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 clunk. It was like this big clanking crash. That was pretty interesting.
Lots of stuff happened before the show. You sound terrible. You're sick.
Yes. Mm. Yeah, we're going to roll the scene. What do we have? I'm going to say RSV. Will it be the coof? Come on. Big money. Ebola.
Zeke on black.
Zeke on black. Yeah, I think it's either, we went to Minneapolis for a no agenda meetup. 130 people was fantastic. In and out one day. Really cool.
Did you fly?
Yeah. Well, I didn't fly myself. We flew Southwest.
Okay.
And it was dynamite. But, you know, you're shaking 130 hands and you're taking selfies. I'm going to say that's where you could possibly get some kind of diseased human resource breathing down my neck. Either that or just the airplane. I don't know. I'm trying not to get Tina sick. That's the main thing. Cause you know,
you haven't been flying lately. Mm-mm. I've noticed this. Mm.
No, we flew to Houston. I haven't had any destinations really. Yeah. I mean, Houston would have been a good one, but I had the pastor and his wife. So we had someone else fly us in a little bit bigger plane. Gotcha. Still a turboprop. Be honest with you, Dave. I'm 59. I fly with my buddy, Mitch, who's my periodontist.
Yeah, it's because you bought his plane for him.
Basically. we're flying out to Dallas. And just the amount of, I can fly. I can do all of this. The amount of traffic and stuff and the attentiveness and, you know, the understanding of the situational awareness of any airport I would go to. I mean, you're still going to be either going to Houston or Dallas, even San Antonio. I mean, it's all going to be within these areas that are heavily congested, lots of airports, lots of traffic. And if you screw up, you know, which can be a hesitation when the air controller asks something, you know, you get put in the penalty box, fly 20 minutes that way. We'll talk to you later. You know, it's
really?
Oh, yeah. They got a lot going on. You know, they got all kinds of, and I'm slow. You know, I'm always going to be slower than any of the big boys. And so I'm just thinking, you know, maybe I should just have someone else fly. It's better that way. It's just, it's a little much, you know. I'm pretty good with the audio mixer. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been doing that for 45 years. I can do that. You know, I'll just do boostagram balls instead of flying. How's that sound?
Yeah. Make a career change. Yes. Yeah. How bad is your illness? Are you feverish?
I was coughing all night. My throat hurts. My body aches. That's about it. So I was like, oh, you might have COVID. Yeah, I might, but I'm not going to test. That's fine. No, I don't care.
They don't even do testing around here anymore for anything.
Do we have home kits? But I'm not going to touch it. I'm just, you know, give me some Advil. I'm good to go. Advil.
Pediatrician literally told us like a year ago, they're like, nah, we don't really test for COVID anymore because it screws up people's school schedule.
Okay. Yes, exactly. Anyway, it's been a very powerful week in podcasting. A lot of interesting articles that have come out based upon the news, which is this.
One out of every six employees of Spotify won't be around next year. The company is making those deep cuts to its payroll as it looks to cut expenses. Top executives blame higher interest rates, saying that they make borrowing for capital expenditures more expensive. The affected employees will receive several months' severance. The cut follows two previous layoffs this year. A total of 800 employees were let go.
Now, I'm pretty sure that's exactly what we were talking about, that it's they have no capital, that the cost of capital is too expensive because of the free money ride is over. It's exactly what we've been saying for a whole year,
It's worth, I think it's worth talking about, because we've been using this term, the free money is gone. And people have been talking about this. I think one in some article a while back used the term, like, the dumb money is gone or something like that.
I wouldn't say it was dumb money. It was free money. I mean, it was free. When it's free money, then you can take big bets on stuff.
But specifically, the details of what it means when to say that the free money is gone is basically this. It is, the way this works is when interest rates go up, basically U.S. Treasuries become more attractive than risky bets, because you have U.S. Treasuries paying, and it's specifically Treasuries paying 5% plus. Investors redirect all their free cash that is available for investing. They redirect that into a sure thing.
Yeah,
I mean, if you can get a guaranteed 5% or more on a treasury bill, then why in the world would you do? Are you going to put any of that money into Spotify or some crazy startup? Hell no.
Well, also, people need to remember that Spotify was not an initial public offering in the truest sense of the word. They didn't raise capital. They just appeared on the stock market. So, it was, reverse listing or direct listing, I think they call it. So there was no underwriter that had all this, that basically sold shares and got all this extra money. They had money, which they had raised privately in subsequent rounds when money was very, very cheap, and their business model will never make them a very successful company, because their business model is owned by the publishers and labels. They owned most of the stock. So that's, and I saw someone like, Spotify is owned by China. No,
that's not true.
No, it's not true. Spotify is owned by Music Insiders, and it's a, it's just a pass through. It's a pass through from you, the audience, to them. And, Spotify, guys, you got to make it work. And so
Spotify is the music labels. I mean, that's what it is. It's similar. I started thinking about it this week. It's similar to Hulu. Hulu was basically the big broadcasters. They're like, they came together and did this essentially joint investment with, and I think it's mostly a lot of them have pulled out now, and it's mostly Disney left holding the bag. But initially Hulu
was everybody.
It was everybody. Yeah. Everybody went in together so that there would be this sort of common marketplace for streaming television. And so it helped them to have like a common digital storefront, because they didn't have to build everything themselves. They could just pump their content over there and then they were done. And that's essentially what Spotify is for the music labels. It's Universal, Sony, and who's the big three, essentially. They just have a common storefront where it's a one-stop shop for people to go and get their streaming music, and that happens to be Spotify.
So the idea that they had, just to review, was let's expand. Here's all this free content. Let's take that and, let's have some of our own shows. And then they went off the rails, and they had McKinsey interview a lot of people. They wrote a whole strategy, a white paper, which I never got a copy of, but they promised I would get it. And I said, no, don't do this. This is not a good idea. This is just not a good idea. And, but what they did is they created a huge hype in around podcasting, which was already on the way up because of great content from, the 2016 Serial podcast. This is what got people interested in again at the height of streaming, when everybody was binging and showing up at the office on Monday morning, you know, their jowls on the floor. Now all of a sudden you had to wait until the next week to listen to this, you know, very exciting true crime drama, which, you know, that's a very exciting content format. And so when they started shelling out the money and buying up, you know, companies that had no profits, Gimlet, etc., Ringer, I mean, they were in, all these companies were in trouble, but it was big money. It was, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. Joe Rogan, you know, we still don't know exactly how much it was, or, but okay, let's just say it's the purported $200 million. And now, that started the whole frenzy, and everybody went, oh, this is great. Fantastic. We're good to go. You know, that with that came, you know, the people who had been scraping by at Gimlet, now all of a sudden they wanted to have, you know, $150,000 a year salaries. The money was flowing. The money was cheap. And now the inverse has happened. You know, it's like, sorry, now we're cutting everything. Now podcasting sucks. Now it's no good. It's, and, you know, AI is all we're talking about. But I do want to take us back to last October 2022. This is the head of Talk Verticals. I think there was this was the presentation. I'm going to say that we probably got this from Pod News Weekly Review. I'm not sure. I know James definitely linked to, you know, to the investor conference. I think that's what it was. And here is how Spotify was thinking just a little over 1 year ago.
Think about it. Podcasting has been around for almost two decades, and it's remained largely unchanged, mainly because of the limitations of RSS. We've been able to replace RSS for on-platform distribution, which means that podcasts created on our platform are no longer held back by this outdated technology. This has opened up a new world of opportunity to add features and formats to the podcast listening experience that have never been possible before. So Spotify is now not only differentiated by our catalog of content, but also by delivering a truly superior product for podcast listeners and creators.
Now, I would wager to say that didn't materialize anything that was superior.
That was actually my clip. I remember that.
Oh, maybe. Yeah. Well, then I only pulled this other one.
Another way we've been able to innovate on the format, we've made podcasts more interactive, finally enabling a deeper, more intimate connection between creators and their fans. One of our favorite things about podcasting is the unique connection it enables between creators and listeners. It's intimate.
So unique.
Host voices are directly in listeners' ears. But until now, podcasting has been a one-way street. Creators publish shows and their audiences listen. Traditionally, RSS has been limited to anonymized, aggregated analytics, and even those are limited to what can be determined from IP addresses.
There you go.
Yeah.
Because of these limitations, fans have never had a good way to reach their favorite creators directly.
No. Because of these limitations, wasn't that creators, and I have a problem with the term creators couldn't, it's not they couldn't reach their audiences effectively, it's that you couldn't track audience members and advertise, and then you were totally able to do it and you still couldn't pull it off.
But now we're changing that.
We're changing it.
Our first way of addressing this was with Q&A and polls, both text-based questions that can be posed by the show's creators and surfaced to listeners in the Spotify app. These interactive features make it easy for listeners to engage with the people behind their favorite podcasts and for creators to hear from their audience directly on Spotify. These features are available now to all Anchor creators around the world. We've heard from many creators that Q&A and polls have been crucial in helping them develop engaged audiences that keep coming back for more.
That's crucial.
Yeah, crucial.
And this is just the beginning of our interactive tools for podcasts. We're really excited to introduce lots of new ways for creators and their fans to connect with each other.
So I am so happy that we just stuck to our guns. We stuck to RSS. Now, this doesn't mean that we solved any money-making issues per se. We don't have any solutions for advertising. In fact, we built out value for value, which does work for people who dive into it. And I think over time, you'll see that value for value will have its hits, real hits. Mm-hmm. I mean, I consider No Agenda to be a hit. I consider this show to be a hit. Now, we can't live off of it, but our project is running off of it. That's a hit.
Yeah, for sure.
That's a hit. You know, that's good. So betting against RSS is just not a good idea. Betting against the general idea of distributing your podcast far and wide through RSS is just, again, not a good idea. Now, here's the problem. You know, the advertising market is finicky. You know, it's what is the hot thing right now? So podcasting was the hot thing. You know, there were $40,000-$50,000 per spot going out. As I was reading in this Adam Davidson, The Rise and Fall of Podcasting. I mean, they had $100 CPMs. Okay. And you know, now that podcasting is kind of falling out of favor because, hey, Spotify can't make it work. They're firing people. It's no good. You know, the media buyers, they're going, you know, they're spending this same money on TikTok or wherever and anywhere but here, which of course is why we have this, the podcast industrial complex. I'm leading right to you, Dave. You can see it. The podcast industrial complex is, you know, is touting video as the only way forward, and audiences have changed and, oh no, we have to stay, you know, we have to be flexible. No. And by the way, This Week in Tech, complete video. All these shows are video.
Yep. That's right.
And I'm sad, you know, here's, Leo had to let three people go who had been there for like 15 years. And he says here, unfortunately, our medium podcasting has suffered economically since the beginning of COVID, as the number of podcasts grew exponentially, the number of advertisers dwindled, and with it, our revenue. At one time, we had as many as 30 people on Twitch staff, not including show hosts, producing more than 30 unique shows. Today, the staff is half that size, and we produce half the number of shows. All video, by the way. So get out of here with your video argument. It's just bull. And they put it on YouTube and all. It's not working because it's out of favor. You know, we will there. I guarantee you in some time, it could be 5 years from now. I mean, this is almost a repeat of when YouTube was purchased for, was it $1 billion or $2 billion? And everybody, oh, everyone's got to have, you got to have video. I know I had a company, my VC were literally saying, you got to have video. It's got to be video. So we did video. And did it make a difference? No.
Do you think video, was video, how instrumental was video in the demise of Podshow? Of Mevio? If you had not gone into video, would you have survived longer?
No, because it was an advertising-based model. That's why I left. It's like, you can't make this work. You can't make it work because CPMs are a race to the bottom, always. It's always a race to the bottom. So you wind up with, you know, cheap, crappy content, and particularly if you're producing video, it gets very expensive very quickly, or at least expensive in human resource cycles. So it just doesn't work. Now, what will happen, and history, you know, repeats or rhymes, we will see another show that'll come out of nowhere that people are going to be crazy about, and it'll be audio, and they're going to love it, and people will start listening, or it'll start being hyped again. Now, will there be, advertising has a place in podcasting. It sure does. But it's not this inserted ads and all this stuff. It's none of that. You know, Bridesmaid Magazine. That's how I see it.
Well, you've got when it comes to advertising, you have a sort of baseline of like brand, what you could call like brand awareness advertising. That's just never going to go away. No. Because, I mean, brands have to, if you're Johnson & Johnson, you've got to just advertise on a consistent basis to maintain public awareness of your brand.
Yeah, I don't see a Johnson & Johnson ad anywhere in podcasting. Not a single one.
No, but there's that out there, and that stuff is just always going to be there. Mm-hmm. But to some degree, I mean, it'll fluctuate a little bit, but there's that background radiation level of brand awareness advertising where it's just like, okay, we just got to do this always. But then there's the actual campaigns where they push specific things and they stick their neck out advertising wise. Those are taking a hit. That's what people are and there's also the thing like specifically with Spotify, they went up during the pandemic, they went up from they doubled in size, 5,000 to 10,000 employees. Mm-hmm. this was never sustainable. I mean, when treasuries are paying next to nothing,
yeah, there you go.
Investors have to put their money somewhere to mm-hmm. get a return, mm-hmm. and why might as well put it into podcasting. But when that's no longer the case and the script flips and you can make guaranteed money somewhere else, you're not going to put your money into podcasting because it's a joke. So when the money dried up, they had no choice but to reduce headcount. The stock price bump they got. I mean, that's like you could call that like a survival bounce, basically. I mean, the stock price, it reflects the fact that being profitable means they just won't go bankrupt. I mean, it's like, you know, it's not like they're going to be gangbusters. It's not like they're going to make, you know, tons of money. It's just, oh, okay, now they're not going to die. It was interesting. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, you know, what happened is the same thing that happened with blogging is people thought, well, I got a blog, I have readers, therefore I shouldn't be making money. No, it's just not true. I mean, I spent 16 years with Dvorak building up an audience, and the first 4 years were not sustainable. You know, we took risks to get it to where it is, and it was much earlier. You know, it was we didn't have the tools. There's a lot of things we didn't have. We were also building the awareness of podcasting, and you know, we've never done video. We've always stayed under the radar. And anybody can go listen to our donation segments, and you'll hear that we are able to sustain two families with kids who went through school, and we're doing okay. You know, it's not Joe Rogan money, but that's okay. You can have a book. You can have a message. You can have a church. There's so many ways that podcasting is beneficial to humanity that just doesn't involve this noise, which is numbers and ad rates. And that's just over for now. It's over. And all we're seeing now is the last jerky moves, you know, like the corpse is still twitching on the ground. And that's, let's go to video. That's where everybody is. You got to be everywhere. No.
Right before the defibrillator pads go on.
They're not going to help. They're not going to help. Yeah. And I wish everybody lots of success, but I think certainly our message has been pretty consistent in this. No, it's just, it doesn't work. Doesn't work.
I listened to Podcast Weekly Review mm-hmm. or Pod News Weekly Review. And they were talking about this 2026 float that Netflix, I mean, excuse me, that Spotify supposedly did, and how that's, you know, looming. That
I'm sorry. Oh, they have to pay back like $2 billion or something.
Yeah. Right. And that's, you know, I'm sure that's in there. But one thing that was interesting is I saw this phrase in the same article by Ben Thompson, where he mentioned that in 2018, Spotify had renegotiated their royalty rates with the music labels.
Yes.
And the deal was, according to him, that the renegotiated lower rate was in exchange for, quote, guaranteed subscriber growth, unquote.
Hmm.
Which I thought was
I haven't read the piece. I'll have to read that.
Okay. I went looking for confirmation of this, and I found a few other articles that mentioned the same thing from that period of time. It was coverage. One was from NPR, where it covered the renegotiation at the time it happened, and it mentions the same thing. And there was another analysis piece that happened around that same time that mentioned the same thing, that basically they had made promises to the record labels that they would have a specific subscriber growth rate in order to get those lower royalties, and if their growth rate ever went down, dropped below that, then the royalties would go back up.
Yeah,
you know, that puts a different twist on a lot of the podcast exclusives they did, like Rogan. You know, the Rogan stuff in that regard, yeah, was it an advertising play? Sure, but it also makes you think, okay, well, if we can't meet subscriber growth demands, pulling in a large popular exclusive podcast.
That's what saved them probably.
Yeah. You get to, you point. Pay out, let's say you pay out $200 million over 10 years. or something like that, whoever, whatever the contract was, if that maintains your ability to have lower royalty rates, that could pay for itself easily.
There's also a cultural problem at Spotify. And if you recall, I wish I had the clip. I probably don't have it anymore. Let me see. It was the CTO. So there were all these music artists. Let me see, CTO Spotify. I wish I had that. All these music artists, and they were bitching and moaning and complaining about, you know, that they weren't getting paid or whatever. And the CTO, I think it was the CTO, he says, you know, you really should be happy that we're putting, that we have this platform for you.
I remember that. Yeah. I think we played a clip, didn't we?
Yeah. I wish I could find it. And it just showed, you know, because initially Spotify was if I recall, it was a peer to peer. It was kind of like a legal Napster initially. It had a peer to peer distribution system. There was something in there, and that changed later, but they've never really, they've always thought of themselves as, hey, we're the big, powerful Spotify, and you should just be happy that we let you ride along in our coattails. It's just the DNA of the company. I'm not saying it's good or bad, but, you know, so there's no one gets any, this is not going to be any love going back to them now that they have problems.
Well, I think they inherited that attitude probably from the music labels, because the music labels
there you go.
Are
there
the you same. Go. But yeah. I mean, think the music labels are, that is, I think maybe people don't appreciate how big and serious of a business the music stuff, the music rights holders stuff is.
Oh, yeah.
If you look, I saw the other day, you posted something about Rush's catalog being sold. It happened back in like 2014 or something.
Mm-hmm.
There's a Rush sold their music catalog, to this company called Olay.
Yeah.
Olay is owned, I think majority owned by the Ontario Teachers Pension Fund.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
the Ontario,
an investment. Yeah. Big investment.
Yeah. The Ontario Teachers Pension Fund now owns lots of music royalty and music catalogs. This is huge business, hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars that is owned by pension funds, retirement plans. These are serious people with high value assets that must make a return. They're not playing around.
No, like, no, exactly. Especially if they control it. No, if they have control. Absolutely. But this has been going on for a long time. And David Bowie famously sold his rights, you know, way back. Shoot, man, I was in the late 90s for $50 million, when $50 million was $50 million.
Yeah.
So anyway, long story short, we need to reset. I think we're actually pretty good. I think value for value is starting to show, benefit. I think that the value for value music is where we have so much room to grow. We can absolutely supplant radio. I mean, radio's got, the numbers on radio are humongous, but it's also expensive to operate. iHeart, which owns a lot of stations, not a very healthy company financially. And, you know, it's only going to get worse. Sirius XM, they're going to have to shoot birds into space again. These things do expire. You know, I don't think interest rates are coming down anytime soon.
I don't either.
So it's going to be tough for a lot of this. And as long as everyone
says, unemployment rate dropped yesterday to 3.7%, yeah, which is going the wrong direction.
Exactly the opposite. According to the Fed. Exactly the opposite of what they want. Yeah,
yeah.
It's so crooked in the world that the Federal Reserve, who prints the U.S. dollar, is happy when more people are out of work. It's amazing.
Yeah, that's what they're cheering for.
They're cheering for it. Yes, exactly.
I brought clips from the media roundtable, speaking of radio, because a couple of radio guys.
Now this, I heard this, so I'll be interested to see what clips you picked. But this is, one of these guys is the professor who teaches podcast. Does he teach podcasting? What is his actual... what is his course that he teaches? Is it audio podcasting?
Business of podcasting or something like that? I'm not sure. He's the podcast professor. I don't know.
I mean, I've sparred with him on Twitter a long time ago. I'm like, what is wrong with you?
I'm I'm sure he's a great guy. I'm not impressed by his analysis. I mean, I'll just put my cards on the table. I mean, which sounds silly because he's a radio veteran and I'm just an IT guy. But I mean, I think I can make the point that some of the analysis is just, it has some fundamental contradictions that make me question the whole thing.
Oh yeah.
Let's just start off by the basic thesis. And I want to drive a point here. So they start off by, he mentions, let me set it up. So this is the Media Roundtable show. This is Oxford Road Advertising Agency. And this is Dan Granger, I believe is his name, interviewing Stephen Goldstein. And Stephen Goldstein is the guy who's a professor at NYU, teaches a class on podcasting. But he's also an advertising guy. So these, just the context here is these are two advertising guys that came into the podcasting world from radio, according to what they have described themselves. So Goldstein, I think had a pretty big hand in the study a few months ago that said that most people listen to their podcasts on YouTube.
He is, his Amplify Media, I think is his,
that's it.
Is his thing.
Yeah. Advertising.
Advertising. Yeah.
And so he is advocating for moving beyond the RSS feed.
What's a podcast? Because I think that's where we are at this moment. This takes us up to today. You know, does it have to have that RSS feed? Or is it likely to be something else? And I think about this, and we'll talk about this probably quite a bit. I think about this outside of podcast terms. I think about things like NBC. They used to feed shows to affiliates around the country. That's not the business they're in anymore. And weirdly, they used to pay the affiliates. Now the affiliates pay them, but their content is on apps and streams and it's all over the place. They're going to do whatever it takes, including YouTube, to get audience. And that's where we are in podcasting.
No, that's where you are in podcasting, bro. And yes. I just want to point out, you know, Stephen B said, you know, V4V Music is so small, drop in the bucket. That's not the point. What this guy is going to be saying, all of the, you got to be the biggest, you got to have more, you got to grow your show. No, that's over. That is all going to be over. Nothing will be sustainable anymore. There's too much media. There's too many channels, too many streamers. There's too much out there. The CPMs, there's no artificial inventory shortage that you can create because you can just create as much as you want. It's a race to the bottom. So that is over. But the people who are in V4V Music right now, they have never seen any money from Spotify or any of the streamers. Now right. they're seeing, okay, $100, $500. They're ecstatic. That's the point. That's where we're going. You don't need to have the biggest numbers. You don't need to be the top of the leaderboard or the ranker. It's just not necessary in this new model.
Well, I mean, Harvat said right off the bat, I've never watched NBC on an app. No. Like, yeah, that's these examples of, hey, you know, these are broadcast television and now they're doing streaming and now they're doing, you know, an app. That's a terrible example because those streaming apps lose money. They're all bleeding money left and right. They're not making anything.
This Stephen Goldstein, he's really a radio guy, the way I see it. Right. He's adjunct professor and creator of the Business of Podcasting course.
Oh, yeah, that's it.
Business at Steinhardt School of Culture, Education, and Human Development. Okay.
He goes on a clip, too, talking about chasing audience, which is good.
Can we be more pliable? And so I would like to think that we can move past the RSS feed and being more nimble and focus on garnering audience wherever it comes from.
Does this guy teach how to make good podcasts or just how to get, you know, collect audience members like they're, you know, tarot cards or something?
Well, it's about advertising.
Yeah.
And this, you know, I've been trying to make this point, from, you know, for a while now, is that there is a, how would you describe this? There's a separation in. So these are advertising people. They've already made the transition from broadcast radio to podcasting. There's no loyalty in these people to a particular medium. They are advertising. When you're in advertising, you go to whichever medium is necessary to sell advertising.
Yes.
That's different than the actual podcast industry that is fundamental to the architecture of podcasting. And that's why, you know, we've said many times there is no quote unquote podcast industry, because when people refer to the podcast industry, they talk about podcasting as if it's some whole, but it's not. It's actually very fragmented. You have what you have underneath podcasting is a set of profitable hosting companies, Buzzsprout, RSS.com, mm-hmm. Blueberry, mm-hmm. Red, you know, and you have them as the substrate upon which the content is distributed through RSS. And then overlaid on top of that, you have a bunch of digital advertising people. And the point that I've been trying to make is that those two things are fundamentally kind of at odds with each other. You see that RSS isn't going to give you what you want as an advertising person. So
right.
You're just going to bail out and go to YouTube.
Yeah.
I mean, like if you clip three, he talks about the flexibility, we need more flexibility than RSS. And this is what he's talking about.
But I think we, as people in the podcast space, need to be, what do I want to say? We need to be more flexible.
I love podcast space. Are you in the podcast space, bro?
Yeah. So he says, in podcasting, we need to be more flexible than RSS. Okay. Keep that word in mind. This is what I was talking about flexible. with the some of the fundamental contradictions of the things that are being said. So with that in mind, he talks in clip four about what is RSS.
Well, and as you think about the reason that it's even a discussion, can you just break down for some of the audience why an RSS feed is a material factor and how we even decide where to draw our lines?
Sure. Well, RSS stands for Real Simple Syndication, and that's primarily what it is. It's very flexible.
But we got to be more flexible.
Yes, we got to be more flexible, but RSS is flexible. So this becomes, you know, there's a certain amount of word salad that happens here. And it's this fundamental difference here between the digital advertising people and the actual people who are loyal to ad dollars and brands. And the podcast infrastructure and substrate people who are loyal to RSS and podcasting.
Ooh, I like substrate itself. People. That's good. That's a sexy word. Substrate.
Substrate people. Substrate sounds people. Like an old movie from like the 50s. Yeah. Where like pod.
You know, substrate people.
The substrate infrastructure people have a loyalty to what podcasting is at its foundation. That all sort of comes into play in clip five here.
It is not dynamic. It doesn't come with a lot of data. A lot of advertisers, as you know far better than I, are used to dealing with rich data environments. And podcasting has some of that, but it doesn't natively have all of that. But that is what this industry has been built on. And yet, you know, I don't know why it can't or shouldn't evolve.
So how come Spotify couldn't do it? Spotify had rich data. They knew they knew exactly what people were listening to and how long. Why couldn't they pull it off? Because this clearly it's not just the RSS feed. It's got to be a whole collection of things.
Yeah, and that's a great point, because you have what they're saying is one thing, and what's reality is something different, because it's like, well, advertisers are used to rich data. And so do you mean rich data in the sense of Nielsen ratings? Because that's not very rich.
No, they're talking about total spying, you know, connecting you with your friends. You're on the same network, Bluetooth proximity, apps that are tracking your finger moves. This is the kind of data, you know, data brokers. This is the kind of right. stuff they're used to.
And the only people that make big money in that game are Google. Nobody else make and Facebook.
Yeah, Facebook.
Nobody else makes humongous money in the ad world in that arena. The television arena where data is not rich at all. The people are making money there. I mean, that's real money being spent. And there's no data. I can just watch that on the air and I have to report it to you in a coupon book.
You know what's interesting? At any moment, any podcast app developer, Marco, Fountain, anybody could put all kinds of tracking stuff in their app, which would give that app a huge advantage over, over everybody else. And you can put the SDKs into your app. It's amazing. You can do a replay, exactly see what they were tapping on their screen. You'll know if they're listening in bed, if they're walking, if they're driving in their car. All this stuff is very normal for apps. Nobody does that, to my knowledge, or certainly is not selling that rich data. Why not? What is it about the substrate people that we just don't do that? I'm serious. Yeah. This is very interesting. Are there shysters out there who would want to do this?
I think it's if I'm going to stick my neck out and guess, I think it's because we sort of inherently know in the back of our mind that if we did that, it would be a one-shot deal and then your audience hates you.
Yeah.
It's a take the money and run option. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because as soon as you do that to your customer base, they're out. They're not. You've changed the narrative on them, and they're not gonna.
I mean,
they're not gonna get it.
I see almost every week someone yelling at me. What is this podcasting 2.0? These apps give me ads. I know, bro. That's the podcast you're listening to. That's who's giving you the ads. Advertising is not good in that manner.
Yeah, that's you want to hear the pick money shot? Clip six.
When is it a podcast and when is it not? And where do you think that should go?
And I don't care. I got to say, I don't care. You know, my background is content and audience, and sales dollars chase ears. So let's go find ears wherever they are. We'll figure the mechanics out.
Okay. Well, that's totally fair.
Totally fair.
Totally fair.
Yeah.
Go do
no
that.
No criticism, but the only criticism would be, and if it even is a criticism, is that's not a podcast. That is not somebody who is loyal to podcasting and trying to make the podcast industry into something bigger and better. That is somebody who's in the advertising industry and trying to make the advertising industry bigger and better.
Yes.
And those are two different things because you do have people whose jobs and livelihoods depend on podcasting, not advertising, podcasting. Mm. And when you conflate the two terms, it can do real damage because it confuses the market.
Yeah. Well, there's so much wrong with the market now. I mean, imagine you're a media buyer and there's, and people are saying, hey, everything's down. Why is it down? Well, it's because of the app that's just downloading was not downloading it. But no, that's not it. It's just down. What is it up, down? It's like there's no clear answers. Everybody's dancing around it. It's just not, correct. You don't have rich, great data that you have in other avenues. You just don't. So
it's all iOS 17's fault. Let's just blame it's, clearly.
Yeah.
Obviously. Remember Pearl Harbor?
Yeah.
iOS 17.
iOS 17.
Yeah. The download slowdown, that's an interesting phenomenon too.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting to me because John Spurlock said he's not seeing that same slowdown on OP3 stats, which tells me that the people, I would say OP3 is biased towards podcasters who are very hands-on with their shows. You know, I mean, they're people, they're probably people who are very careful and considerate about the way they do their show stats. They're not just going out and if you're choosing OP3, you've thought about it.
Yes.
And you've probably thought about lots of stuff that relates to your podcast. You're probably a very careful person in that regard. So this tells me that this general slowdown in downloads across the board is happening outside of that sector of people, because it doesn't seem to be happening for shows that are on OP3.
All right. Interesting.
So, you know, that means that there may be just a general falling off in either listenership to the lower tier of shows, or maybe just fatigue on the part of podcasters that are starting to bail out and put shows out at a smaller pace. I don't know.
Now I heard something interesting that, you know, hosting companies have to renew their IAB certification before the end of the year, or they won't be quote unquote certified. What, I mean, is it possible that a lot of these companies just like, well, there's not really a lot of money in advertising anyway. We can give you, you know, the numbers that are compliant, but you know, we're not going to, what does it cost? What does it cost these days to,
get
certified? I thought it had gone down.
Some of the hosts, like, it was like, initially it was like $50,000.
Yeah. But it had gone down since then. Right.
And then they gave everybody a coupon.
And, they did a drink, yeah, coupon, drink coupon.
Yeah. You get everybody to make, you know, like a gift card to like drop the price down to like 12 or something like that.
Still a lot of money.
15, maybe. Yeah. 15.
That's a lot of money. And maybe, you know, look, hosting companies, their business is very simple. Provide good hosting and an interface and customer support. Then if it's going to cost them too much money for not, you know, for, I don't know. Yeah, as Nathan G says, $12,500 for a new member. Oh, they really took it down. $6,250 for renewable non-member. Oh, if you're not a member, it's $17,500 and $8,750. So that's a lot of money. It's real money.
That's a lot of money.
It's real money. It's real money.
Well, I don't. The hosting companies may be looking around and seeing that. What's the point?
That's my point exactly.
Yeah. What's the if? So here. You can juxtapose this with the Apple, with the podcast slowdown. For some reason that nobody fully understands yet, all of a sudden downloads across the board just dropped 16-17%.
Except for Pocket Cast. There it went up.
Yeah.
How's that work?
Yeah. So if you have that, if global downloads can drop by 17% and nobody knows why, What's the point of even having some sort of IAB certification?
Well, that's an excellent point. That's how poor the data really is. We don't even know why. Yeah.
What I would, you know, as an industry, everybody could say, well, we're doing it based on the way that the last spec that we saw, we're basing everything on that, and that's good enough. Yeah, we're good. But,
you know, this stuff has never worked. I mean, they brought in Terry Semel into YouTube. It's always when you bring the Hollywood people in, look, AOL bought Time Warner. Come on, this has been going on forever. Oh, yeah.
Once we
put the technology with the content, it's going to be great. No, and now this is kind of good because everybody can now blame it on Kim Kardashian and the Obamas and Bruce Springsteen. And, you know, they can pretty much blame it on everybody except Joe Rogan. They can blame all this, you know, Harry and Meghan. Oh, it's all their fault because, you know, Spotify burned money on them. That's I guess the upside of what they can do anyway.
The scapegoat.
Yeah.
I thought, so I have a cron job that runs every day and it sets feed priority and popularity. So this cron job runs on the Podcast Index front end servers. The front end API servers, they log every call for 90 days. And every morning, a cron job runs and looks at yesterday's log and tallies up for each feed that was requested for episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so if an app requested an episode list using the episodes by feed ID endpoint, and that call came from a recognized developer token that's in a list that I've curated that I'm not going to say who's in, but it's, you know, it's Podverse, you know, Fountain. It's developers who are writing apps that we know are legitimate.
Mm-hmm.
So if it meets those criteria, if one of those apps requested a episode list for a podcast feed, it tallies those up and then says, okay, the feed popularity needs to be bumped up, or the feed and or the feed priority, if it's not a pod ping enabled host, needs to go up. So in order, basically it's tracking all the time to see
what's being requested.
What's being requested, so that then it can begin to inform the aggregators, the search about popularity ranking, and it can inform the aggregators about whether they need to pull that feed more often.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a standard thing we've been doing. I've never really looked at that script. So I went back and looked at it yesterday. Just, I'm like, you know, I wonder how many feeds this thing collects.
What is this thing doing here? This is Dave's AI. Yeah. You let your AI run for a year. Uh-huh.
And just out of curiosity, I'm like, okay, well, I threw some stats into it. In a day, in a 24-hour period, there were 35,169 individual podcast feeds that were requested.
Hmm.
That's
individual ones.
Pretty low.
Yeah, individual ones.
Yes. Individual, distinct, unique podcast IDs. I think that's pretty interesting. So if we have 4.29 million shows in the index.
Yeah.
And in a typical 24-hour period, less than 40,000 of those are actually being in sort of interrogated for their episode list and their metadata.
I would look at it differently. I would say, look at your 60 and 90 day episode updates, which is around 400,000. So your almost 40,000 will be 10%. That's how I would look at it, because this 4.2 million.
Yeah,
whatever. We know the truth. We know the truth. Podcasting is much smaller than that. It really is.
So yeah, that's a good way to look at it. So out of the 338,000 over 30 days, roughly about 10% of those shows that update in 30 day period
is what people are listening to. It's what people are listening to, yeah. or request. Let's be fair, or be requesting an episode list.
And I think that are numbers conclusive about it, are representing? No, but I will say that, I mean, shows like, I mean, apps like Podverse and Fountain, and specifically those two have very low, I mean, they have a lot of users.
Yeah.
Lots of users. And those, while this may not be wholly representative, it's a pretty good number. I mean, I feel good about this number if you just step back and say, okay, how many shows do you think are actually something that people listen to across the board, globally? If I told you, we know how many update.
You'd have to give me uniques per week, per month. You know, then we need to know frequency of update of each of these individual shows. But I don't know.
Okay.
But,
well, take the 90-day stat on the index, 462,000. So that's how many shows that have published an episode in the last 90 days. If you know that number, I'm like, okay, well, Those are how many feeds that are publishing episodes. Well, then, and we know there's some duplicates in there and that kind of thing. So there's a margin of error. But if you then say, Let me come at it this way. If I told you, if we were talking and I said, hey, you know what? I bet you the number of shows that people actually listen to on a daily basis is less than 50,000. Would that surprise you?
Now that's only across our apps.
I'm thinking across the board.
Well, why? Because this is on, this is not, this is only our apps. I mean, you think,
yeah, I know, but our apps were showed 35,000.
Mm-hmm.
If I say 50,000 or less, I just have this gut feeling that the number of shows that people actively tune into and listen to on a daily basis across the globe is in the 5-digit range.
It could be. It could be. And it's still a lot.
Oh, it's a lot. I'm just, not a criticism. I'm just saying that these
could be.
It's a sort of a real, it's a real reality check in a way.
Well, but I don't know if you can, if you can slice and dice it that way, because, you know, all of our apps have, you know, under combined probably have under 1% market share of what people are using to listen to podcasts. So,
but it would, but ours would be representative of a whole.
Hmm.
You know, because if you take the audience, that it'll say if Podverse has 10,000 users, and Apple Podcasts has 10 million. Well, the list of shows that they, that doesn't affect the number of users, doesn't necessarily mean that the range of shows are going to be different. So what, you know, like what I'm saying, you're just going to have more downloads, but that doesn't mean you're listening to more shows.
Okay. Yeah. Well, also, this is, you know, this data that you're talking about is not download data. This is like someone actively is looking for something. Is a real human, right, probably doing something? Yes.
Possibly. I mean, that you could say searches would be more of an indicator of that. This is this is more like things that are actually, they would be initial subscriptions or catch ups, aggregation help, you know, things like that.
Mm.
I don't know. It's something I want to look at over time, just out of curiosity, not because there's any, you know, immense value to it. But it's just, it would not be shocking if it's a 5-digit number of how many shows people, out of all these shows that people actually listen to on a daily basis.
It wouldn't surprise me. Yeah, 50,000. It wouldn't surprise me. And on a global basis, I guess. Yeah.
Because that's actually a lot of shows. I mean, 50,000 shows.
It's a lot of podcasts.
That's a lot of, I mean, that's, you know, a factor of 10 more television shows and stuff than there are.
Likely. Yeah.
So you're already that's so much content that you're way out on a limb already. So I don't know. It's just a point of curiosity to me.
I have a couple things on my list. One is Podroll. So you've been doing work on that?
Yeah.
You want to share with the class?
Well, I'm trying to put it into the, I haven't had much coding time this week, but I'm trying to put that into the API, you know, calls. Right. Actually, we're already generating the lists. The JSON mm-hmm. lists for those, but now return them in the actual endpoints for podcast data. So like when you request a feed, it would also show you the pod role for
that
feed.
Okay, right.
Or the pod role that feed is producing. And that's a better way to say it.
And I guess the question is, how will Daniel J. Lewis be able to use this to create some magical stats that he can sell to people?
that's his job. I'm not doing his job for him.
I'm just curious if you had any thoughts.
I mean, he can suck it in and then, you know, start slicing and dicing the way he does. If anybody needs more stuff in here, like if you look at those lists, as you said, Daniel, so it made me think of iTunes IDs. If people need iTunes IDs in there.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. You can hand that off.
Yeah, yeah. Let me know, because the more data that's in there, the less requests they don't have to just turn around and hit the API to get it. I'm also doing something for John Boot over Transistor. He contacted me about some stuff with Podroll, so I'm doing some stuff for him, and I'll talk about that. I think it's going to be a new, there's going to be a new endpoint for just saying, here's a batch of feed IDs. Give me all the current metadata for all of them.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh. And if I can get that to work right, it might also solve Daniel's problem because Daniel asked for the iTunes lookup endpoint to support multiples.
Right.
And I might be able to combine those two. The way it's funny, the way, so the way it works in our database is we have an Apple table and then we have a news feeds table. Now the news feeds table contains all the podcast feeds and the Apple table contains metadata that is specific to what the way this thing exists in Apple. And then we have linkage between the two. So when there's an iTunes ID in the news feeds table, it links to that record in the Apple table. So it can get a little weird because like the, at the low level, at the underlying level, the, where the endpoints call the low level functions to actually get the stuff out of the database, it's actually two different functions. So the podcast by feed ID endpoint calls a function called get feeds by ID 3. And that just pulls, does a query on the news feeds table with a whole bunch of joins for other tables to bring in 2.0 specific data. Then, but if you do hit the API endpoint called podcasts by iTunes ID, it actually does a request on the Apple table and joins in all the rest of it.
Wow.
So it's not,
that's quite a service. Just because,
yeah, so just because you can do something with like, just because you can make something work on the normal side doesn't mean that it's just a straight like copy paste over to the other. Like the SQL statements are really very different. So it takes like brain power to say, okay, this is what I'm doing over here. Now for the iTunes ID endpoints, I've got to convert that to this equivalent thing over here. It's not always as straightforward as it seems. Okay.
Bringing up another point, I want to make sure that Daniel and Sam are both heard. Activity streams. This is, you know, when I hear someone saying, no one listens to me. It's like, I hear you. I hear you. So I've looked up activity streams. This is a web standard. So this is supposed to be the fix for everything. I'm not understanding. Do you have an opinion on this? Or, you know, I know Sam has baked this into PodFans and they've got 30 activity streams, which as far as I know, it's like more like it started kind of like web-based stuff.
Yes. Activity streams is, activity streams is related to the JSON LD, which is a way to sort of schematize JSON and bring, it's sort of like JSON LD is to JSON sort of what XML was to HTML.
Okay. I gotcha.
That analogy breaks down, but that's about as close as I can get right now. But it's a way to take a schema and say, because inherently JSON is schemaless. It's a serialization. It's an object serialization language.
Right. But is the point here, because, you know, this supposedly is some magic potion. If everyone just did activity streams, we'd have cross app comments. We'd have boostergrams going back and forth. And I just don't understand it. Does everyone run their own servers, their central servers? Is it just everyone puts a file into their feed? This is kind of the information I'm looking to understand.
Well, I mean, activity streams is an activity pub. I think I'd mentioned that they're on the Mastodon. They're two sides of the same coin. I mean, activity streams is the sort of the baseline of the way ActivityPub gets pushed around. So you can say, you know, an ActivityPub defines a set of, you know, endpoints and things like this, where it's like, okay, you can find this data here. You can find this other data here. There's an inbox, an outbox, an actor. And here's where they live. Activity streams is the actual protocol by which those actions take place. So, I mean, you really, it's hard to separate the two from one another.
Mm-hmm.
in the sense of like what things look like in the real world. When you're interacting with Mastodon and stuff, you're interacting with ActivityPub and activity streams at the same time. Sam took a similar approach to what Benjamin Bellamy did with Castapod and said, okay, well, activity streams and activity pub are the social, you know, the open social standard. And there's object, verb, subject, language that happens. And that fits what we sort of do in podcasting. It's a person, the actor following the action, you know, which is the action, a podcast, which is the subject. I mean, like this, the model fits for what podcasting is. So you can sort of take that activity stream idea and lay it on top of podcasting and you could see how it works. And so that's what Benjamin Bellamy did with Castapod. He's like, well, let's just embrace that, that model and build our thing around activity streams. But then expose it with ActivityPub so that it's compatible with Mastodon and all these other things. And Sam did the same thing. And it's not a bad idea. I mean, it's good. The bridge that I'm building that I haven't had much time to work on this past week it's just my goal is then just to get it initially compatible with ActivityPub.
Right.
So that it's followable. And
excuse me.
God bless you.
I couldn't hit the mute in time. I'm sorry. I tried to get there.
But activity streams, that idea, sort of that model is, yeah, I mean, I think it works. It's just a matter of how you build it out.
I mean, what's interesting is that just cross app commerce, just no app developers care. Everyone has some kind of implementation. It's in there. There's no seamless way to do it. And it just doesn't seem, some things you just can't force it. If the app devs aren't doing it, then it's just not going to happen. Doesn't matter what you choose.
Well, I get inspired by stuff like this. I'm glad that like Benjamin and Sam. Oh, thank you, Eric PP. Yeah. It's object actor target. I said object actor subject. Yes, target. So I like this idea because if it works and it becomes a really nice experience, then you have, you know, Sam is an app, Castapod is a platform, a hosting platform. Now we have two, then you have the Fediverse over here that is commenting and interacting with this stuff. Now you have three good sets of examples and other apps can now have this rich and you have Minipub from John Spurlock. I guess what I'm trying to say is the ActivityPub world is getting built around us. Like as we speak, yeah. I mean, there's been a lot of people that have, been kind of irritated by the slowness of it, but it is building itself.
Yeah.
And you could choose, if you look around a year from now and you're like, oh, this is interesting. There's a lot of, there's a lot of stuff out there and you can, it only takes a little bit of code to, and now all of a sudden I've opened up this interop between my podcast app and what Sam's doing over here with Boosts I can follow this action and I can now benefit from seeing things over there and the bunch of people subscribing to this podcast on PodFans. I can trend that in my thing or show comments or else.
To be honest, if I just look at Podverse and I look at our show, which I always make the root post, your board meeting post. Uh-huh. And so, from the last show underneath you is Spurlock and then Alex Gates and then 33 over 10 Erhead. I mean, this is all Mastodon comments, but they show up in the app. It's pretty cool. You just have no way to interact from the app. That's the main problem I have. It's like, why can't I just reply here in the app? Seems easy.
If you go to our website and go down and look at into an episode and do
comments, tons of comments. It pulls it all in. Yeah, tons of comments.
And it's right there. I mean, it's all there for the taking.
Yeah. Everybody's busy. Everybody's busy. Everyone's busy.
but see, that's my point. Stuff is getting built.
It is.
Yeah. You know, it's and we knew this. I think we talked about this like a year ago. We started talking about how the low hanging fruit was plucked.
Yeah.
Now
the real work starts.
Yeah, because the hard stuff involves protocols. And protocols are harder than markup.
Well, it's a golden age for us in podcasting because we are the future being built right now. Yeah, yes. Everything else is old hat. It's all going to happen. People will become more and more aware. People already are. I mean, it's just podcasters need to tell their audiences. That's all. And it's happening.
Hey, I've got something on my list to ask you about.
Okay.
And it's the image copyright thing with that James had written about. Mm-hmm. You are an expert in this area because did you bring the first successful lawsuit about Creative Commons or
yes.
about you have sued people and won when it comes to image copyright infringement
specifically. Yes.
Do you have thoughts on this whole thing?
That's not quite the same as the issue with the Creative Commons lawsuit that I mounted. This is very unique. The United States has, smartly, I think, a whole bunch of protections for exactly this. I mean, what this reminded me of, and, James got it. We had a little back and forth. Because, in Australia, I guess there's a lot of things you don't have. And one of them is, a very clear way for, a copyright takedown. There's a process. We're members. So, like $6 a year. And then if someone finds something that we're surfacing and it's copyrighted, I would personally say, hey, why don't you go over to those guys? Cause they're posting it. But if you want, we'll take it down, no problem. And there's no lawsuit involved. What this really reminded me of is there was a guy who worked for me at my company, Think New Ideas. And this is in the 90s. What was his name? Doesn't matter. And he became incredibly wealthy in the porn business. He had...
Oh, I've heard... You've talked about this guy before.
Yeah,
moved to like LA or
something. He had Malibu. He had the house in Malibu. He had the Ferraris. He had, his wife was riding horses all day. And they had like the real upscale porn. Like,
Was he into Bitcoin? Was he a Bitcoin guy?
No.
Okay.
Real upscale porn, high-end stuff. Like beautifully shot, et cetera, beautiful models, the whole thing. And I was just, I'm just talking with him and he kind of explains his business, which is not really selling porn to people. It's copyright lawsuits. And the way it would work is if someone had downloaded usually a torrent or a movie from some file, they would be snooping IP addresses and boom, they'd send you a note and say, hey, you clearly downloaded this porn. It's ours and $5,000 or we're going to sue you. And you really don't want that to be out in public, do you? And that's how they made their money.
No way.
Yes. That's how they made their money. And a lot of it, because everyone's like, I mean, it's kind of the, these days is a funny one. Well, you get an email that says, I saw you, I've hijacked your computer. I saw what you were doing over there. Now you better give me a Bitcoin. So we've all seen that. But this was real. And, and they would basically blackmail and they had top-notch lawyers who would do this all day long. Do 10 a day.
Wow.
That's $50,000. And people would do it like, oh crap, I don't want anybody to know that I was, especially not that porn, whatever.
Yeah.
So that it reeked a bit of that to me. Now it was I realized it was $450 Australian. Like, well, come on, that's like a hamburger.
That's $20.
It's like a Big Mac.
That's an Andrew Jackson.
And obviously, I think it's good that that James wrote this up. This is not something that happens in America, and I guess Pod News is a LLC. Is a U.S. company, so he got out of it that way. But you know, there's all kinds of, to me, this is just a shyster. And I would have been like, oh yeah, really? Why don't you come and see? I don't care. I mean, we've had, remember we had that guy who was like, I'm representing Fox News and you're breaking copyright. And I said, okay, well, can you just show me how you represent Fox News? He never came back with that. And then he'd come back, you know, sometime later. And he'd be like, ah, you got to get this. This is, you know, copyright violation. And we're happy to take it down, but you got to show me that you actually represent the owner of this work. Yeah. And I don't know how we resolved it, but he went away.
He just never came back. Yeah, he just gave up.
Just gave up on us. So there's a lot of these shysters out there.
Well, it's like, that comes down to, is it legal? Yes. Is it ethical? No. I mean, like, this is not. Yeah, just but because something's legal doesn't mean that it's ethical.
Ethical doesn't make the world go round. Porn and IP addresses makes the world go round. That's how you get the place in Malibu. So
that whole thing, that whole scam, though, that has evolved to actual recording of things now. So that because I do cybersecurity a lot for my day job. Mm. And a recent thing that I was. Conference that I was in was talking about how that whole scam where you get the letter saying, I got pictures of you, you know, that has evolved to where now it's a little bit of a combination between pig butchering and that. So now you get contacted and they're like, and some fake, hot girl will chat you up.
Right.
For a while and get you to actually record yourself.
Oh no.
You know, wanking or whatever and send it to her, him.
And this is going on at your office?
No. No. This is the new global scam.
Oh, okay.
And so then, and it's catching, you know who it's catching? Of course, it's catching teenage boys.
Yes, obviously.
And they record you and you record yourself and send it to them like a dick pic type thing.
Oh goodness.
Then they're like, oh, you know, check this out. I'm going to send this to all your friends on Facebook unless you give me $200. And the $200 is specifically
it's what they think the kid can afford.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. They're like, okay, we can't do so much that they're going to freak out. And not be able to get the money. We do just enough where they could probably scrape it together and send it to us. And there was one example of a guy that got arrested that was doing this scam. Mm. He was making millions off this.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
doing like 100 a day.
Whenever I get any of those emails, I reply back. You owe me a Bitcoin. Have you seen that thing? It's got an elbow. Give me a break. You owe me for looking at it.
I'm not a copyright owner after all.
I'm not that sick. All right. I have, first of all, thank you, Dame Jennifer, for registering modernpodcastapps.com. She heard me say it on Boost the Grand Ball to Modern Podcast App. And she said, oh, I'll go register that. Thank you. Of course, that forwards to our app section. Kyron, dear old Kyron, has an issue. Which with a shim, and this was an interesting, and I finally dug into it. I'm like, okay, now I understand what he's talking about. So he used for his Buzzsprout feed for the value block, he used Fountain. And I guess, so Fountain as the shim, which is basically the same thing as the Podcaster Wallet, with the difference, and I don't know if we can do that with the PodcasterWallet.com, but with Fountain, you can set value blocks per episode. Correct? Did you know this?
In Fountain, yes, I did.
So they're writing to I guess they have write permissions, and they'll write whatever splits Kyron wants per episode, they'll write that to the value block.
They have a part, they're in the partner API.
Right, exactly. So now Kyron wants to move, his feed, but and I guess he wants to move to a host that has, that has it all native in the feed. Now he's stuck. So the question is,
why? Why is he stuck?
Because he doesn't have a feed that he doesn't have the information. There's no feed that he can look at even and say, this is all the value blocks I had for every single episode.
It would be in the index.
Yeah. Yes. But he has to recreate every single one of those one by one. He needs to export it.
He would have to do that anyway, right?
You know, he wants to. So his question is, can he export a feed that has all the value block? Let's just say, for argument's sake, he wants to self-host.
Okay, all right.
So he needs a feed that has all of his value blocks in there. Should that be something
that he can do a feed? So that he can do a feed import?
Correct. So is that something that we should offer? Which, by the way, is an interesting feature. You know, download your feed as it is from the index is interesting. Especially let's say your host blows up and just goes away or whatever, and I have a perpetual backup. Or is that something Fountain should provide since they're providing the shim functionality?
Well, I mean, I guess ideally Fountain should provide it, but that's, you know,
we'd like to facilitate.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're good guys.
Speak for yourself, Dave Jones. You owe me $5,000. Hey, I saw your IP address.
That's good for you. Yeah, I mean, we could do that. Yeah, but we could export an XML of just sort of the basic, sort of like reconstruct a feed. If you need, you know, like, hey, I need a feed of this.
Right. Yeah.
We could do that. Yeah. I mean, I could build that.
Which brings me to my final point for this board meeting.
No.
OPML. And
are you gonna bust my chops for not?
No. I'm gonna ask you a question, a philosophical question.
Oh, my favorite kind.
So OPML is the most misunderstood format in the world.
Affirmed. Yes.
And this kind of came to me when I saw, was it Christopher Isine, who he's publishing an OPML file of, you know, a day's worth of pod pings, which I'm like, this is cool. So I go to import that OPML in my Freedom controller, and it basically just shows me a whole list of empty links. There's nothing in there. And OPML which is outline processor markup language. If people follow the spec, it is a very powerful, powerful format that we could use for so much more than just subscription lists. You know what I'm saying? And you could export lots of basically your data. You know, it would, like, the idea of take your data with you would be much more than just your subscriptions. It could be, you know, your wallet. It could be all kinds of stuff we could put in there. And there's, you know, I think you and I have always seen future possibilities for OPML as a format for all kinds of social activities.
Yes.
Is it worth telling everybody, please go look at the spec and do it right? Or is there so much misinformation out there that it'll just never happen?
Well, who's doing it wrong?
Everybody. Everybody does it wrong. I mean, if I take any OPML export from any app and I want to import it into a proper OPML outliner, it never works.
Yeah, you're right. I mean,
never.
Well,
not a single one of them.
I mean, OPML is, people, the biggest issue with OPML is that it's married to RSS in a way that's wrong. People think that OPML is just an RSS subscription list.
Yeah, that's wrong.
But OPML is not. It's not. It's OPML is its own thing. It existed before RSS subscription lists were a thing. RSS subscription lists were just a use case for OPML. But yeah. OPML itself is a completely independent self-sufficient markup language. And I don't know, man. I don't know where to put that.
I just wanted to bring it up, you know, because I'll tell you, here's what I found with OPML. I do all my show notes in an outliner on the Freedom Controller. I publish an HTML and I publish an OPML. And because I've consistently for about 10 years published an OPML, Bingit.io exists. You know, there's been search engines built. And if you look at an OPML file from No Agenda as an example, from Clips to articles, offline versions of articles. All of it is all beautifully organized in an XML format. Happens to be OPML. It's collapsible. You know, it's such a rich format. There's so much that people could do with it. And I don't know. Maybe maybe that train has left the station. I don't know. I've always loved it. I've always thought that's so cool. Yeah.
Yeah. We just need to share your OPML for podcasting again. And that's probably something that, I'm going to put that on my,
we put in, I don't know, 8 years worth of work into the Freedom Controller, 8 years worth. And we had SOPML, you know, we had this whole social construct, which integrates seamlessly with RSS feeds. It updates automatically when there's an update from, you know, an RSS feed, which, you know, is, inherently wasn't even a podcast feed. It was, you know, just a blog post. I mean, there's so much beauty in there.
That is going to be my Christmas present to you is a share your OPML endpoint in the API.
Ooh. Okay.
Let's do it. Here's how we could do it. We make it where it will accept an OPML file. So you're in PodFans and you export your feed list. And an option can pop up and say, do you want to share this anonymized feed list with the podcast index?
There you go.
You say yes. They send us the XML through an endpoint post action.
Uh-huh.
We take it and we interpret it. We decode the OPML into a pod role. We basically convert the OPML. Okay. We save the OPML, but we treat it as a pod role, so it's a way for people to share their subscription lists.
I like it.
What do you think?
I like it. Well, is that my Christmas present? Could I have the sweater? Still
for 2024. No, it's next year's Christmas present.
Next Christmas.
I already sent you your Christmas present for this year.
You did?
Did you get it yet? Yeah.
Now I feel like a heel. You sent me a Christmas present.
Well, that's my strategy every year is to send you one to make you feel like crap.
Well, it worked again. I haven't even received it, and I feel like crap. I feel like crap in general today, just because I'm sick, and now you've made me feel even sicker. Thanks.
I sent everybody. I sent lots of Christmas presents.
You do send Christmas presents. Yes, you do. I know you do. You're good at that. No, I'm bad.
You're gonna like it. I just hope you have a DVD player.
I got a computer that'll play that. I can't wait.
Okay.
Can't wait to see what you've dug up now, Dave Jones.
as long as you get a DVD player, you're good.
Yes, I do. I do.
It's not porn. It's not your porn from your buddy.
Okay. All right. Good. Good.
Because you get sued for that.
$5,000. That's how it goes.
It may be worth it.
Five grand. Shall we thank some people?
Yeah, sure.
We've been getting a couple of boosts here move towards the holidays. These are nice boosts here.
Can I ask you something real quick?
Yeah, of course.
Before you do that, I'm trying to get James on the show because we usually have him on for Christmas week. What's your Christmas look like?
We're going to have to coordinate that. I got to take a look.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
Yeah.
Are you going to be... thought you might be busy with family or traveling.
No, we have events, you know, but it's all in and around town. We're not traveling, but we do have events. We've got events. We got dinners and we got all kinds of stuff. So we'll figure it out.
We always have to do him at night anyway, because the time zone's saying, so we could do it like one night.
Why doesn't he just get up in the middle of the night?
If he's willing, 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, come on.
He might not be coherent.
If he wants to be on the Mighty Podcasting 2.0 boardroom.
That'd be a fun show. Very powerful.
Thank you, Dovidas. RSS Blue, 7,500 Satoshis. And he reminds me correctly, Ainsley Costello feed is up. Yeah, this is good. This is the live concert. There's going to be two, December 20th, December 21st. Man, Dovidas is such a hero. He got the feed up. He got the connected the stream, And he then went and checked every single podcast app to make sure that, you know, what worked and what didn't. Guess what? Everybody's got work to do.
That was on test day.
Yeah, test day, exactly. Yep. And so here he has links for PodFans, for Podverse, Podcast Guru, CurioCaster, beautiful. So you can find that. I guess you could find this in the chapters if you go to the chapters, not the table of contents, but you can find it as it flips by at this very moment as I'm talking about it. Thank you, Dovidas. Sam Sethi boosting late over there in the UK. Two boosts here, two boostograms, 10,000 sats. I'll go in reverse order. Activity streams are user. Oh, it's actually the same. He boosted twice. Same message. Thanks, Sam. Activity streams are user generated events. The user owns this just as the podcaster owns the RSS. All apps could publish activity streams to the podcast index. Then, like Saturn, I could see the action verb boost, and now we have cross app comments.
Yeah. It's the protocol for user actions. Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yep.
So we just, everyone needs to build that in. Okay. Done. Taken care of.
He's right. He's, I mean, like it's essentially the, you know, his idea is boost that it integrates with boostergrams in a way, because boostergram is just an action that a user is taking. So you can represent that with an activity stream event.
Right.
Absolutely. For sure.
We have this Dreb Scott, even though I think he's supposed to be on a long weekend with his wife, but I don't know. He's boosting Dreb. Us. Dreb, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Thank you, brother. That's actual money these days with the Bitcoin price. Salty Crayon checks in with a row of ducks. Had to reboost since Podverse is under duress. Oh, no.
What's wrong with
Podverse? I don't know. It's under duress. Health Karma boost for the Podfather. Thank you. New chair boost for the Pod Sage. Hopefully the new chair is beef milkshake sturdy. 5x5 in the pipe. Mike Newman checks in. Striper boost. 77,777 sats. And no note. Salty Crayon again with 40. And there's Comic Strip Blogger. Oh, how about this? 10,000 sats, wishing you a merry Cryptmas, he says, Cryptmas, and a happy new fork, Bitcoiners. Yo, CSB. All right.
CSB with the English puns.
Yes, crazy. What do you have on your list, Dave? That was all the live boosts that came in.
Well, I've got Oscar and the boys at Fountain sent us $200 from PayPal.
Oh, boys, thank you so much.
Baller, shot caller, 20-inch blaze on the Impala.
Thank you. Those things help.
Man, my office, this podcast room looks so nice now.
With the new chair?
I spent some time this a couple of nights ago rearranging everything. The reason I rearranged is because I finally got a UPS battery backup unit.
Oh, that's the way to go, man.
Yeah, I ordered that thing you sent.
The same one? It's pretty powerful. It'll run a lot of gear for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nice.
And if it starts beeping at me, I'm going to rip the stupid beeper out of it. I'm going to desolder that thing.
I actually haven't heard it. I don't know if mine beeps or not. It's in a server rack cabinet. So I haven't heard.
Oh, you got a 19-inch rack.
I do. I got one of those that you set on the floor. So it's like it's like a quarter rack height. And I got all my stuff in there. Yeah, I got the 5 gigabit fiber router in there. I've got my Start 9 in there.
I know Dreb said, "How could you not already have a UPS IT guy?"
Yeah, I know. So I have the generator. So when the power goes out, there's always this 25-second delay in case it's just a brownout. So the studio stays on, and then the generator kicks in, and everything's beautiful.
Hey, man, I'm good now. I'm gold.
Yeah.
I'm up tight. So thank you, Oscar. Appreciate that $200.
Yes, we do. Thank you.
That's very meaningful. Gene Everett, 2222. Through Fountain, he just says boost.
Boost.
Boost. Gene Bean, 2222, Road Ducks through Castomatic says a podcast app that integrates in a downloaded YouTube video would be awesome, as most YouTube downloads end up being ad free.
Now, there was a lot going on about this. I saw Mitch was looking at it, and Alex Gates said, oh, here's how you do it. And I don't know if anyone actually took any action on that.
Yeah, from what I heard, from what Alex said, it's just at the heart of it, it's just an HLS stream. So it should work.
So,
I don't know. I guess we'll see what happens.
Any app that'll do this Ainsley Costello video feed will also be able to do this with the YouTube item, supposedly.
Stands to reason.
Okay. Yes. All right. Well, maybe I'll try it.
Do it.
Yeah. I mean, how can I screw up my feeds any worse than I already do? I mean, everything's a mess.
You've had such success with Lit. I think you should try this thing, which is harder.
Yeah. Lit is really working for me. John Spurlock's making fun of me.
Like, watch your time zones. Change your time zones.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's for me, it's like this, like AM, PM. It's like when I set it, then I don't check it. And it's just, I need to pay more attention. I need to pay more attention to it. It's hilarious, hilariously bad.
Hey, some people are still posting on Mastodon. We'll be live in 15 minutes. So I think you're already ahead of the curve. Plus one to, let's see, this is Gene Bean 2222, another row of ducks from Gene Bean. He says, plus one to super chapters and the way that could be integrated with podcast hosts' existing chapter creation interfaces. It solves the UX aspect in a very clean and simple way.
Well, I didn't understand that at all.
You remember super chapters? That's where...
Yes, Dovidas super chapters. Yeah. It works beautifully. It's a great way to explain it to people.
Sir Brian of London, 1948. Happy Hanukkah, Brian.
Yes.
He says, through Castomatic, he says, I hate it, but I agree. Okay. Podcasting 2.0, no agenda, and fucking pivot. I can't help myself.
It's harsh, man. I can't help myself either. I mean, it's crazy how loyal I am to my hate listen, which is pivot. It's unbelievable. It's like, oh, it's Tuesday. Oh, it's Friday. My hate listen is out. Yeah, I can't wait. It's nuts.
I've got a new hate on the media. I didn't have a hate listen.
Well, on the media, they had a repeat this midweek show. That was lame.
I know it was boring.
It was like from January. Yeah, on the media is a good hate listen, and it is good.
After the Trump thing, I'm sold. he's got me by the short hairs.
Yeah, I wish they were 2.0. I'd boost them. I'd boost my hate.
I would too. I'd do 500 stats a minute minimum.
Boost. Hey, what did I hear? You now 1,001 stats per minute.
Yeah, you shamed me publicly.
I didn't shame you. I never said anything about it. I have not mentioned my boost size at all or my stream size at all. I have not
your stream size.
My powerful stream. I have not mentioned that at all. I keep my support on the QT.
I'm your co-host, and if you publicly reveal that you have a fat stream, I have to reveal the size of my stream, but game.
I didn't reveal that my stream was fat.
It got revealed, so I had to respond.
So there's no privacy choice anymore. You know, it's like, oh man, look at this! Look at the fatness of that guy's stream.
Check out those enormous boosts. Yes. Oppie 1984, 4,000 sats through Fountain says, back in September, I wrote a blog post about sat-based advertising in response to Chris Fisher and a discussion he had on Office Hours about the adpocalypse hitting podcasting. My idea is similar to what you were talking about and thought maybe you'd like it. Oh, because it has a link here to it. I guess that's like a blog post. He says, also, this is not a I thought of it first boost, but I'm sure many people thought of it before I did. P.S. 12345 Spaceballs boost is a boost level over at Jupiter Network. They even have a sound for it.
Oh, that's Spaceballs from the movie Spaceballs. I got it.
Yeah, that was the 12345 was the combination on his luggage. Yes.
I think that didn't Fountain basically try this? They tried to get, you know, they would give people sats for listening to ads. I don't think it went anywhere. I think it kind of petered out. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure if I've never really believed in that idea. Like, I'll let you know. I'll give you my time. I'll listen to your ads if you pay me. I don't know. This never quite felt right to me. I don't know. I've never seen a successful implementation.
Kyron at the Mere Mortals Podcast 1629 through Fountain. He says, been a while since I had an episode where I understood almost nothing. So all I can say is podcasts are cool.
Podcasts are cool.
But believe me, I don't understand it either, Kyron. I'm just hanging on to Dave's coattails.
Renee Knigge.
Knigge.
3521 sats through Podverse. He says, we still have that stupid. We'll see. Okay. All right. That's interesting grammar. He says, we still have that stupid taxes with the promise we could download, not upload anything anywhere except. So, I think he's talking about the recordable media tax that you were talking about.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, so he's in Holland, right? They probably do pay for it. I'll bet you they do pay for it.
We still have that stupid taxes.
Yeah.
With the promise we could download, not upload anything anywhere except software. Then they said no more downloading and still taxes on everything with storage. Everything. I still download, of course.
Yeah. Wow.
You criminal.
We got your IP address. You got a letter coming from our lawyer. $5,000.
Kyron, again, 2222 from Curiocaster from the Mere Mortals podcast. He says, sent an email just clarifying my problem from the last episode. Hope it helps. Yes, it did help.
We've already fixed your problem. We're going to fix it.
Yeah, I will put a XML export on the thingamajigger.
The thingamajigger.
The API.
Yes, that's great. That's great.
Thingamajigger.podcastindex.com.
Thingamajigger.
We got some monthlies. We got Podverse, $50. Thank you, Podverse. Thank you. And Mitch and Creon. Brendan and Podpage, $25. Mark Graham, $1. Joseph Maraca, $5. Emilio Canomalina, $4. New Media, $1. Basil Phillip, $25. Thank you, Basil. And Lauren Ball, $24.20. Thank you, Lauren. And that's our group.
Yeah, we appreciate these. This is value for value. We've been talking about it. This is a great example of how value for value works. And the proof is in the pudding. You know, we're smoking our own dope here. Let me go take a look at the tally coin stuff. You can go to podcastindex.org down at the bottom. There's two links. One is for your fiat fund coupons. That's for the PayPal. Another one is we'll take you to our on-chain support portal, which no one has used since October 27th. But of course, what we really want you to do is get a modern podcast at, thank you, Dame Jennifer, modernpodcastapps.com. Fill her up and boost to your heart's delight. And, it's interesting to see, I guess, just before we end here, I'm seeing more and more apps start to integrate the Breeze SDK. I'm reading about, not our apps, but, you know, general Lightning apps, and the Albi must really be growing fast, because you know they're really trying to keep everybody, I guess, under a million sats in your wallet. It's like, you know, please, I guess they don't want the responsibility, which I can totally understand.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I wonder, do you think Roy or somebody, he did a Breeze SDK overview once before. Do you think he'd be willing to do one just for the podcast developers?
I think that would be fantastic. I know that Stephen Bell has looked at it, but it doesn't really work well for the PWAs.
Yeah, self-host. Yeah, yeah. Web apps are going to be, that's going to be tough.
And why is that?
Well, I mean, because you got to have your keys and everything visible. If you're a web only app and you don't have a server backend, you essentially can't have any secrets.
No.
You know what I mean? Because it's all going to be visible somewhere, because the only thing there, the code that runs everything is right there in the browser. Mm. So you can't hide it. So you can't even have like podcast index API tokens. It's just right there.
Oh, I thought CurioCaster used the server. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure how he's doing it, but. Right. That's just a general problem with PWAs. He may have like one small backend server, but it might not be enough to do this level of processing.
And I thought that that Albi was going to do an integration with the Breeze SDK. So maybe we still have to ask. Well, first, I mean, I know we talked about it. If we get the Get Albie guys Albie on? Guy. Yeah, yeah, we should get them on. I noticed that, right? They didn't knock your door down when you mentioned it before. They're not like, oh, I got no time for these podcasts. 2.0 guys.
They hate us.
They hate us. Like, no, we're doing Nuster, man. It's like, come on.
All right, I made a note of myself to myself.
Too. You got a lot of notes. How are we going to finish out this year with all these notes? There's so much to do.
Let's see. There's Boomy and Moritz. One of the 12 Moritzes that I can't ever remember.
There's a number of Moritzes in our life.
Yes. Okay. All right, I got a note on that. All right, I got that note. We're good.
Yes. All right, brother.
I wanted to say our hosting fees too. Like, just an end of year update on our hosting fees. We're currently paying $665 a month to Linode.
That's up from what it was last year, isn't it?
Yeah, it's up by nearly $100.
$100, yeah.
And our Cloudflare bill a month is $90.
There's some other stuff. Yeah. So that's not too bad.
No, it's not bad. Mm. It's not bad. We've got some other stuff in there, like, you know, we got to pay lawyers and accountants and all that good stuff.
But yeah,
that's
yeah.
our primary. Those are our two big ones each month.
And our node is, seeing as all the every payment that goes to the node stays on the node, we're a pretty good routing node, I think.
Yeah. I forgot about that. How much is what's our bill to?
Oh,
to
voltage.
To voltage in like $1,200 a year or something?
Yes, a little more maybe. Okay. Yeah, I think it's at least $100 a month, probably more.
Because he like he had to like give us bigger discs or something.
Yeah, all kinds of bigger stuff. We have a very unique situation. It's like nobody has the amount of transactions we have.
It's insane. Outrageous.
It's insane. It's insane.
Did you know that every transaction that comes through our node, we sync down to a MySQL database so that we can properly report our own taxes and all that.
I know you do that. And yeah.
Yes. And so we have every transaction that's ever come through our Lightning node, the podcast index Lightning node, we also have a copy in this MySQL database.
Wow. Including all the TLV records.
Yes.
Oh man.
Everything.
Now that's a data bundle I'd like to mine. That would be cool.
It's how we generate the V for the podcast.
V for V stats. Yeah. The top stats. Let's see. How many tops do we have today while we're at it? Podcastindex.top. Let me see. Today it is the top 119.
Nice.
Yeah.
It was 169 last week.
Let's see. This reads almost like, I love it. I got the Italian guy up in fourth place.
Fusarario. The one you started with?
Yeah, yeah. I started with that show. All of a sudden, there's all these Italians like posting on my Twitter, like, blah, 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 boost a grand ball, blah, blah, blah.
That is solid Italian right there.
Yeah. This whole thing reads like Boost the Grand Ball. Christmas comes but once a year. Morning love from the Dorfels. Bacon on my mind. Nice. Nice.
We have all those. We have all those in the database. And that database is now 21 gigs.
Oh, cool.
It's
cool.
Pretty big. Yeah. That's 21 gigs of... That's 21 gigs of nothing but Lightning transactions.
Gotta love it. Gotta love it.
3 years worth of Lightning transactions.
So do we archive that at a certain point, or do you move it off into do you send it to the mountain to tape drives in the mountain?
Tape drive, Iron Mountain. Yeah, that'll be fun.
At Costco, everyone should know about this. Costco, there's a 14 terabyte drive they're selling.
Oh, a single disk?
Mm-hmm. Seagate 14 terabyte drive for $149.
Holy crap.
That's pretty cheap, man.
Oh, that's dirt cheap for a 14 terabyte drive. That's an external drive?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, $150, there it is.
Yeah, $149. Yeah.
Did you ever in your life think that you would see the day where you'd have a 14 terabytes on a single disk?
Well, considering my first hard drive was for my Mac Plus and it was an external 20 megabyte SCSI drive, which was bigger. I mean, that was like a school bag is how big it was. The scuzzy plug.
My dad did some work for IBM a long time ago. He was an RPG AS400 programmer.
Oh yeah.
And he got this little, it was some sort of little pin or something. It was like a commemorative thing. And it was a one kilobyte chip. It was like, what do you call it? Like static RAM or whatever. Or core memory or something like that. It was like this 1 megabyte chip encased in like hard lucite or something like that. It was like this little, you know, novelty thing. Like this is, you know, this is awesome. You know, this thing and like is one megabyte.
Amazing. Well,
I was sitting on his desk forever. And we're like, you just look at it and you're like, oh my God, that's one megabyte.
Well, do you remember, in order to download a picture that was 1 megabyte, it would take literally an hour. I think it was one megabyte to an hour.
And you just hoped that it was a progressive JPEG.
Yeah. So you could see the chick unveil, you know, black and white, the interlacing happens
as it comes.
Exactly. All right, everybody. Now we've gone too far. Dave, have yourself a great weekend, brother. You going back to the office?
Yep. Going okay. Back. Yeah. You get to feeling better, man.
Yeah. Oh no. I got a second wind here. It's good. No wonder that smells so bad. No, no worries. All right. Thank you all, chat room. Thanks for being here. Thank you for supporting us. Value for Value Podcasting 2.0. The Boardroom comes back next week. See you then.
You have been listening to Podcasting 2.0. Visit podcastindex.org for more information.
Go podcasting!
That's a wow.